This is a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Later on the program, we continue our series on sustainability at the University of Arkansas by talking with a farm manager who converts leftover cooking oil into biodiesel. Also, runners prepare for this weekend's Chili Pepper Cross Country Festival, and we talk to a local high school coach about how proceeds from the race benefit his team.
But first, changes in healthcare are coming to Arkansas. Healthcare reform passed in Washington, D.C. earlier this year, and it will drastically change wide portions of how healthcare is delivered. Yesterday afternoon, Arkansas Surgeon General Joe Thompson spent nearly an hour discussing the possible changes during a luncheon at the Fayetteville Town Center, sponsored by the Fayetteville Forward Health Action Group. The rest of this week on Ozarks at Large, we'll hear some of what he had to say. Today, how we got where we are and why serious discussion has to take place over the next few years in Arkansas to decide what to do by the time full health care reform plan is law in 2014. Tomorrow, some nuts and bolts numbers about the uninsured population in Arkansas. And Friday, how Dr. Thompson thinks we need to change some of our own attitudes toward health care. Dr. Joe Thompson was appointed to the cabinet-level position of Arkansas Surgeon General by Republican Governor Mike Huckabee and retained by Democrat Governor Mike Beebe. He's a practicing pediatrician at Children's Hospital in Little Rock, a professor in both the Colleges of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. He has had many reasons to study the approaching changes in health care.
I'll tell you at the outset, it is a disruption. It is a disruptive act. It destabilizes everybody, the insurance companies, the hospitals, the providers, the employers, families.
But Dr. Thompson told the audience, disruption on its own doesn't mean good or bad. It just means it's going to change the way things are done.
And I think the important thing is to say our healthcare system has never been stable in its existence, so it was always changing. So this is a disruption that gives us an opportunity to make change happen for the good. Or if we don't fully engage, let change happen that takes us in a less good direction.
Dr. Thompson joked early that his first priority should be to place the state's politicians in canoes on the Buffalo River and keep them there until they had agreed on Arkansas's approach in the next 2 years to the coming changes in health care policies. After his presentation, he took a more serious tone, explaining the bill is law, and there is time for Arkansas's lawmakers to construct a plan so most of the changes can benefit the state if, he says, political posturing can be shelved.
I think it has to happen. I mean, the politicians that are arguing for repeal of the Health Care Reform Act don't have an alternative. The system that we had was falling apart. This represents an opportunity for change. I think the federal government never fully implements a program. It's always state or local communities that have to pick it up and make good things happen with it. And I think the baton is going to be transferred to the state of Arkansas to make something happen that is good for the citizens across the state. We can drop the baton and something bad could happen, but if we grab hold of it well and we sprint quickly, I think we can make good things happen.
Arguments with signs and slogans attract attention, but do little to seriously advance the discussion over what health care should or could be. An understanding of health care's history and how the system developed over the past century is essential to that discussion, Dr. Thompson says. The United States is the only country in the world, he says, that relies on employers to provide health insurance.
Every other developed country in the world has a different system. That actually our employers today are competing against employers that operate in those different systems. Why did this happen? It's because in World War II, when all of our soldiers, millions, were overseas fighting, it wasn't fair for them to be risking their lives while people who stayed here and were working because of the manufacturing pressures were getting raises and making more and more money. So the U.S. government put a wage freeze across the nation, said you can't give a raise. Our employers, which are pretty savvy, said, well, I can't give a raise, but this health insurance benefit doesn't cost much. All we have is penicillin. Let me give you a health insurance benefit. And that's what took us down a path which makes our nation totally different from every other developed country that we compete with because of our reliance on our employer sector to provide coverage.
The Hill-Burton Act, passed by Congress a few years later, gave low-income loans to hospitals so they could build. With the agreement, they would treat everyone without regard to ability to pay. In 1965, Medicare and Medicaid were created to help elderly and aid the poor. Just 7 years ago, prescription drugs were added to Medicare. Dr. Thompson lined up these developments and other changes in the country's healthcare approach for a reason.
So I put this up here to show you our system has never been fixed. We've always been changing it. And about every 10 to 15 years, starting with Eisenhower, and then Kennedy, who had Medicare, Medicaid passed, and then Nixon, and then Clinton, and now the Obama administration, they tried to add an improvement.
Matching healthcare reality to healthcare desires in the U.S. is a historically tricky thing. Almost every discussion or argument, Dr. Thompson says, revolves around what he calls the Iron Triangle. People want three things from healthcare: high quality care, accessibility, and an affordable price. The reality, he says, is two out of three, very possible. Devising a plan with all three, very difficult. In Arkansas, a state with a lower median income than almost any other in the country, providing health care to everybody has been especially tough. In the past 8 years, the average insurance premium for a family of four in Arkansas has nearly doubled from just over $6,000 a year to close to $11,500 a year. Over that same time span, the employer-employee percentage paid for health insurance has remained roughly the same, about 27% taken care of by the individual, the rest by the employer. But the overall cost has gone up for both employer and employees dramatically.
So we've had our employers say, I can't afford to continue to pay this. We've had families say, I can't afford to continue to pay this. We haven't had incomes rising this much, and we haven't had our employers making more money this much. So what happens? Either employers or families say, I just can't afford to continue to pay this.
This equation means the median household in Arkansas, earning about $37,000 a year, is paying about 10% of take-home pay on insurance, or dropping health insurance altogether. Dr. Joe Thompson, Arkansas Surgeon General, says many of those people may never be able to get back into an insurance plan, at least not at an affordable rate, or with a plan that covers serious pre-existing conditions.
Socially and morally, we think people ought to be able to buy health insurance and then have the problems that they have taken care of. But that is not the insurance business model. Let me tell you, you don't get to buy car insurance after you wreck your car. Okay? You don't get to buy homeowners insurance after the tree falls on your house or lightning strikes. But we think about health insurance as you should be able to buy it and then have it take care of you, even if you've got a pre-existing condition or you have a history or a previous illness that you are not insured for when you come in. So we have to solve this issue that the way insurance works and the way we think about health insurance are different, because the business model has gone down the path of doing what insurance does. If you've got a pre-existing condition, that shouldn't be part of what we cover. If you are, you know, having symptoms, then you shouldn't then go buy insurance to have it taken care of. It should be for something that happens in the future, not something you know of in the past. So insurance companies have put lifetime caps, different insurance companies in different ways, some more aggressively, some less so. Pre-existing conditions, they exclude things that people are not, or that they have had a previous illness for. And not all insurance companies do the same, but enough do it that it raised the concern of individuals about how our insurance market's going to work. And we have enough people that have lost insurance that now are worried they can't get back in. And we have a number of people that still have insurance that are worried they're not going to be able to afford it next year.
So history, rising costs, and our own expectations about health care have brought us to a certain point in the early 21st century. Now, over the course of the next few years, things will change again. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, more from Dr. Joe Thompson on the impact of health care reform on the state. Arkansas, Dr. Thompson says, has about 500,000 uninsured people, most of them between the ages of 19 and 64. Most have full-time jobs or are married to somebody with a full-time job. What health care reform might mean to many of those 500,000 uninsured Arkansans over the next few years, that's discussed tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large.
How committed you coaches are to our kids, it's unbelievable. I thank the Chili Pepper for allowing me who, by the way, my budget's not hurting too bad, okay? And allowing me to see, you know, what actually goes on and how important every dollar is.
High school cross-country coaches from around Northwest Arkansas attended a press conference at Jose's in Fayetteville yesterday and were the recipients of money raised from the annual Chili Pepper Cross-Country Festival. Board of Directors President David Swain was on hand as six local high schools received checks for $5,500, a 37% increase from last year.
Last year we gave $4,500, I think, and we gave $5,500 this year. And the number, we had an efficient event last year, and it's a good sponsorship. It was a success, so we were able to up it to, and that's over $200,000 over the course of the 21-year history.
The race began in 1988 when the Fayetteville High School cross-country coach mentioned that his team's budget was only $100. His friends Joe Fennell and Randy Ryan created the Chili Pepper Running Club and then the Chili Pepper Run, which was originally held in May and only consisted of the 10K open run. The Chili Pepper Cross Country Festival was created in 1992 to combine three Northwest Arkansas cross country races into a single event. Swain, who was a member of one of John McDonald's championship teams at the University of Arkansas, along with his family, have been involved with the race for the last 21 years. His sister won the inaugural race, Swain's son was born a few hours prior to the race 1 year, and now that same son competes at Chili Pepper for his high school. The organizer's passion for running is one of the things that has made this fundraiser so successful for the past two decades.
People that run are committed to running. I think I talked earlier about the fact that we've got ex-athletes, Razorback track athletes, invested their time and their energy in high school programs. Anytime you've got someone like Chris Buckman, who's you could hear his enthusiasm for the sport involved with it, it can't help but succeed. And running's a great sport. It's a simple. And you run, once you learn to run, you run for life. And that's what we've wanted to promote, kids being involved in running, cross-country running.
Approximately 4,000 runners and more than 4,000 spectators attend the Chili Pepper Festival annually. This year, a total of $33,000 was given to Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, Rogers Heritage, Springdale Harbor, and Fayetteville High Schools. With a modest budget of $550, Brett Unger, the girls' cross-country coach at Springdale Harbor High School, is happy to receive the donation and puts it to good use.
The program has exploded the last couple of years, and we had 43 uniforms, and we had over 60 kids running. And so we had guys wearing girls' uniforms, and vice versa, girls wearing guys' uniforms, which is a nightmare. The guys hated it because the girls, we didn't tell them it was a girls' uniform, but we knew, and everybody that could see them would see that it was a girls' uniform. And we had girls crossing the finish line, taking their jersey off, giving it to boys to go, you know. So anyway, we used it for all the warm-ups, all the uniforms, new uniforms, and we're getting new warm-ups this week, hopefully. And then we also took an out-of-town meet early in the year to Texas, which was a tremendous benefit to our team as far as team bonding and all that goes. And so that's what we use the money for. There's other little things, you know, some summer training, you know, some kids that need shoes, stuff like that, that we've used it for. Other little, you know, massage rollers and small things like that. But of course, all the entry fees and everything, our budget really has a hard time covering that and bus drivers and stuff. But so we use it. I mean, we use it up every year. I mean, we love having it.
The 22nd annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Festival will be this Saturday at the University of Arkansas Cross Country Course in Fayetteville. More information is available by calling 479-530-5954 or by visiting chilipepperfestival.org.
This is Ozarks at Large, and local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, featuring complete coverage of high school football in print and online at arpreps.com. And Walton Arts Center, presenting the Broadway production of The Color Purple, October 19th through the 24th. Based on Alice Walker's novel and the film by Steven Spielberg, the musical adaptation comes to life on stage for 1 week only. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
Ozarks at Large is also supported by Dr. Ben DeMiranda at Mana's First Care Family Doctors in Taneytown, West Springdale, now offering extended hours until 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Walk-ins are welcome. located on Highway 112, just north of the 412 intersection. MANA.MD or 361-1020 for more information.
And this debate reminder, Justin Harris and Earl Hunton, candidates for State Representative District 87, will discuss issues in a public debate tomorrow night beginning at 7 at the West Fork Community Center in West Fork. The debate is sponsored by the Washington County Observer. I'll serve as the moderator. Doors open tomorrow night at 6. The debate begins at 7 sharp. The event is free and open to the public. This is Ozarks at Large.
On this edition of Ozarks, we continue our week-long series about how the University of Arkansas is working toward a more sustainable campus. In a silver metal shop located right off Highway 112 in Fayetteville, leftover cooking oil is being converted into biodiesel. The Department of Crop, Soil, and Environmental Sciences is one of the groups taking part in the University of Arkansas's sustainability initiative. Farm manager Ron Cox explains.
What our project is, and it's kind of started out as a recycling project, we collect the used cooking oil from the cafeterias on campus and bring it out here and we process it into biodiesel. And then we burn the biodiesel in our tractors here on the farm in place of petroleum diesel. Been doing it for a little over a year now, about a year and a half, and things work pretty well. We collect anywhere from 80 to 120 gallons a week and convert that into, it's about an 80% process. We get about 80% diesel out of the oil.
This is Cox's eighth crop at the university. He explains that the technique used to convert the oil into fuel is not difficult.
Well, it's a pretty simple process. You take the oil. Of course, you have to filter it and get all the particles out of it and make sure there's no water in it and get it good and clean. And we put it in a processor. We put it in a processor and you mix methanol and potassium hydroxide with it and just let it circulate or process for 4 hours or so. And then it will, then you let it set overnight or and it separates. Your diesel will be on top, and your byproducts of glycerin or glycerol will be on bottom. Then you, all you do then is you drain the byproduct off the bottom and set it to the side, and then you take the diesel and you filter it some more and process called dry washing, which is nothing but a fancy filter that filters the impurities out of the diesel. And that process takes 4 to 6 hours. Once that's done, it's done. We pump it in our tanks and then directly in our tractors after that.
Cox adds that the conversion process isn't something he developed, but rather a pretty standard recipe that many people use.
It's a process called titration, where you test the oil to determine how much free fatty acid is in it, and that determines how much methanol and how much potassium hydroxide you mix in there. And once you do that, then it's just a matter of mixing, kind of like following a recipe, mix it all together, and it comes out diesel at the end.
Once a week, anywhere from 80 to 120 gallons of oil are collected from the kitchens on campus.
We have a tank. We have collection tanks at each one of the restaurants, and they dump their oil in. And we have a tank that was in the back of a truck, and we take it up there, and we just have a sump pump. We drop over in the tank and just pump it out of the tank into our tank, and then we bring it back out here and set it in the shop out here, and then we pump it out of that tank into our processor.
Recycling the oil into fuel saves money because the university doesn't have to pay someone to haul the leftover grease away. It also helps with the cost of gas. Cox says it only costs about $1 a gallon to make the biofuel, and he estimates he has made about 3,000 gallons of biodiesel so far. More information on the university's sustainability efforts is available at sustainability.uark.edu.
This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, October 13th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thousands of cars and trucks travel between Fort Smith and Northwest Arkansas each day. That's not a new phenomenon, but Interstate 540 has made the trip faster these past several years. As a result of I-540's construction, the traffic on Old Highway 71, now considered a scenic highway, has been reduced dramatically. And many of the businesses that thrived on that traffic have closed on 71, but not all of them. As Ozarks at Large's Luke Gramlich reports, one business on Old 71 is still welcoming visitors.
From Winslow driving south, the first cabin court was called the Westerner Motel, and then the next one was called Green Shadows. There was one called Airview, and several of the buildings from Airview are still standing, and it's a private home nowadays. And then the next one south was Skyview.
That's Glenn Jorgensen, the owner of Skyview Lodge. Skyview is the last remaining cabin court motel still in operation along U.S. Highway 71 between Winslow and Mountainburg. Jorgensen says in the early days of automobiles, cabin courts sprang up all along this stretch of 71. He says tourists would often vacation at Devil's Den or Lake Fort Smith and stay at one of the many cabin courts. Today, most of the cabin courts have been torn down or turned into private residences. Skyview Lodge, however, still attracts tourists who come to sit on the porches of the cabins and take in the scenery of the Boston Mountains. Jorgensen says Skyview has been in operation for over 75 years.
Skyview's been here since at least 1933. We think 1932, but we know for sure it was an operating business by June of 1933. And the original owners were Mr. and Mrs. J.T. Jones. And they sold Skyview to a woman by the name of Lyda Black.
Widow Lyda Black and her sisters operated the lodge from 1934 until 1940, when she sold it to Mr. and Mrs. E.M. Winters. Jorgensen says the Winters made some changes to Skyview.
Mr. Winters was the one that built the dining room onto Skyview, onto the main building. They left the foundations and raised the buildings that were on them, and then rebuilt the frame buildings onto the foundations that we have. One cabin down here, number six, still has partial log walls, and they're covered on the inside by tongue and groove paneling and on the outside by the rock work. And then cabin four, the one we can see out the dining room window here, if you look at the little jog in the siding, from there to the towards the road, there are logs in the walls of that one as well. And then there are a couple of remaining log walls in the front part of the main lodge as well.
In 1947, the Winters briefly leased Skyview to Mr. and Mrs. C.C. Stinson. In 1948, they sold the lodge, which then changed hands 13 times throughout the 1950s. Jorgensen says many of these owners owned Skyview for less than a year.
I did talk to a lady one time who was a pink lady at the hospital, an older woman who was a volunteer, and she and her husband had owned Skyview for a very short time in the winter, and then traded Skyview without having operated it at all. Traded Skyview for a farm over in Oklahoma.
Jorgensen says in the 1950s, a 10 to 15 foot climbing tower was built on the roof of the lodge to allow for a better view of the surrounding mountains. In 1962, Colonel and Lillian Butov bought Skyview, and Colonel Butov dismantled the climbing tower because it was unsafe. The Butovs would go on to become Skyview's longest owners. Jorgensen says while operating Skyview, Colonel Butov became a well-respected individual in the surrounding community.
Colonel's motto was kind of, "I will sit by the side of the road and be a friend of man." And he was well known in the community. He was instrumental in helping to bring the rural water to Winslow. He was on the board that helped develop the, from what I understand, that helped develop the rural water system that draws water off Lake Fort Smith.
During the Butovs' tenure at Skyview, guests experienced more than just the view of the mountains.
They raised giant rabbits, and they raised Norwegian wolfhounds. Down behind the big building down here, there used to be a little tiny barn, and it said puppy school on it. They raised different varieties of dogs from time to time, and Colonel Butov was well known for a number of years for keeping peacocks. The people who stayed here in the 60s and 70s and come back and visit us ask if there are still peacocks around.
The Butovs owned Skyview until 1985, when the lodge was sold to the Childs brothers, two truckers from Alaska. The Childs brothers owned Skyview for several years until it was taken back over by the Butovs estate. Then, in 1994, current owners Glenn and Janice Jorgensen purchased the lodge. Lodge. Jorgensen says when Interstate 540 opened in 1998, business at Skyview started to pick up.
Our gross income increased 25% the first year the interstate was open. A big part of it had to do with the internet. We had our first website published in about 3 months before the interstate opened. It had a very positive impact on us because it's a little hard. It's very difficult to run a resort or, you know, a vacation type property sitting on the side of the road where 12,000 vehicles a day are going by.
Skyview has had its share of interesting guests over the years, but Jorgensen says their most memorable guest would have to be
the Australian that ran over the pig in the middle of the night. This fella who'd gone to the university but moved to Australia years ago and come back to visit some friends, and he was having a long weekend with some friends, and they were driving up 71 in the middle of the night at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, following a Tyson pork truck, and ran over a live pig. And it broke one of the pulleys on the engine, and so the engine was overheating. And they needed a place to stay. And by the way, could we possibly call the state patrol so they could come and shoot the pig that was injured? We got them settled, and then at breakfast the next morning, the tow truck driver for the rental car company came, and he was up underneath the front of the car, hooking up the tow cable so he could tow it up onto the rollback. And he reaches up under there and he says, "By golly, you did run over a pig. Here's the ear."
For more information on Skyview Lodge, visit skyviewcabins.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Luke Gramlich.
Just ahead on Ozarks at Large, Antoinette's daily look at this day in history, a conversation with Becca Bacon-Martin. Today, she's talking about the craft fairs that are popping up all over Northwest Arkansas. The latest edition of Arkansongs and more, all still ahead on Ozarks at Large. Everyone at Ozarks at Large and KUAF is preparing for our fall on-air fundraiser. It begins a week from today, October 20th, and we're hoping to make it our shortest fundraiser ever. And we believe we can do it in just 3 days. You can help us with that goal right now by sending or calling in your contribution in advance. Once we reach our goal of $140,000, the fundraiser will end. You can contribute online at KUAF.com or call 800-522-KUAF. The Bentonville Public Library is pleased to present the children's art exhibition, This Is My Mexico, now through October 15th, in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month. The Mexican Ministry of Foreign Affairs, through the Institute for Mexicans Abroad, invited children of the world to create a work of art for their yearly drawing contest with the special theme of commemorating the bicentennial of the beginning of Mexican independence and the centennial of the Mexican Revolution. 30 of these drawings are on exhibit at Bentonville Public Library. And the League of Women Voters of Washington County will host a public forum on rising child poverty in Northwest Arkansas October 20th from 6:30 until 8 p.m. at the Pat Walker Center for Seniors at 12 East Appleby Road in Fayetteville. U.S. Census figures released this month have shown a sharp rise in child poverty in Northwest Arkansas and the 3rd Congressional District. A panel discussion at the forum will focus on the latest indicators, stories of families in our local communities, as well as proposed policy initiatives. For more information on the forum or league membership, you can visit the website lwvarwc.org. That's lwvarwc.org.
American pianist Art Tatum was born on this date in 1910 in Toledo, Ohio. The nearly blind musician was self-taught and is considered one of the greatest technical virtuosos in jazz. At 13, after starting on violin, Tatum concentrated on the piano and was soon performing on local radio programs. At 21, he moved to New York City, where he made his most impressive recordings during the 1930s and 40s, using a Stryl-style left hand and highly varied right hand stylings. In 1943, he organized a trio with guitarist Tiny Grimes and bassist Slam Stewart, and he played mostly in the trio format for the rest of his life. In his improvisations, Tatum often spontaneously inserted entirely new chord progressions, sometimes with a new chord on each beat, into the small space of one or two measures. His reharmonization of pop tunes became a standard practice among modern jazz musicians, horn players, as well as pianists. In rhythmically unpredictable spurts, he often generated lines with notes cascading across each other while weaving in and out of tempo. Few jazz pianists fail to incorporate at least one favorite Tatum run or embellishment in their playing. Several jazz pianists, including Bud Powell and Oscar Peterson, as well as other jazz musicians, clearly exhibit and credit Tatum's influence. Devil's Den State Park, located in the Boston Mountains of northwest Arkansas, was created on this date in 1933. It's one of the best-preserved Civilian Conservation Corps park developments in the United States and contains the largest sandstone crevice cave area in the country. The park is popular for a variety of recreational opportunities and was designated a natural area by the Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission. The cornerstone of the White House was laid during a ceremony in the District of Columbia on this date in 1792. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We've made it to the middle of this week. It's Wednesday, October 13th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone is Becca Bacon-Martin, the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
I'm on the phone because I'm on the way to the Shiloh Museum in Springdale for their beans and cornbread fundraiser.
You had me at beans and cornbread.
Huh?
You had me at beans and cornbread.
Until 2 o'clock at the museum, $6. You can't beat it. But this is also a big day in Northwest Arkansas. Before there was Bikes and Songs, there were other things that brought crowds of people to Northwest Arkansas. People wearing unusual clothing, but similar to each other. People who did unusual things.
Okay.
This is Fall Crafts Fair weekend.
Oh, I honestly thought you were going to talk about football. People wearing red and calling the Hogs. But no, you're talking about War Eagle and such.
This is War Eagle weekend, starting today. And as much fun as anything is looking at the people who make their own shirts for their group. Which is wearing unusual but similar clothing. Starting today. We're going to do a quick rundown. It's in What's Up from last Friday. It'll be in again this Friday. Spanker Creek Farm in Bentonville, or up by Bella Vista, starts today. They also have a Spanker Creek Farm Festival at the Clarion Hotel in Bentonville. It starts today. The Bella Vista Arts and Crafts Festival starts tomorrow. The Jones Center Fall Arts and Crafts Festival starts tomorrow. War Eagle starts tomorrow. The War Eagle Mill Show starts tomorrow. The Sharp Show of War Eagle starts tomorrow. Most of these go through Sunday, but check out the list because some of them don't. Some of them end on Saturday. The Frisco Station Mall Arts and Crafts Festival in Rogers starts tomorrow, and two versions of the Ozark Regional Arts and Crafts Festival, Friday and Saturday only, one at the Holiday Inn and Convention Center in Springdale, and one at Embassy Suites and the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Go buy something fun.
Is it humanly possible to hit them all?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's scary.
Yes, it is, because I have.
All right. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Friends of the Eureka Springs Carnegie Public Library will open their fall book sale Thursday, October 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the library's annex located at 194 Spring Street. The sale will continue Friday, October 15th from 9 to 6 p.m. and Saturday, October 16th from 9 to 4 p.m. All proceeds go to the library's acquisitions fund, More information, 479-253-8754.
Garrison Keillor and Writer's Almanac just ahead on Ozarks. A No Chiggers, No Ticks, No Twisted Ankle tour of the flora and fauna of Tanyard Creek Trail will take place from the comfort of the Bella Vista Museum Sunday afternoon at 2. The tour, the result of 10 years of photographing the trail area through the seasons, when volunteers Emily and Bill Robertson worked to preserve the wildlife indigenous to the area. The museum is at 1885 Bella Vista Way, the entrance road just off Kingsland, off of Highway 71. The public's invited, no admission fee for this event. For more information, 640-8336.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Your Total Fitness Shop, offering cardio and strength equipment for all levels, over 65 brand-name supplements, and a variety of fitness accessories. Family owned and operated since 1994, with locations in Fayetteville, Rogers, and Little Rock. Gift cards are available. 521-3481 or ytfs.com for more information.
Support also comes from Walton Art Center, presenting the Chamber Orchestra Academy of St. Martin in the Fields with pianist Jonathan Biss Friday, October 29th. Featuring an all-Mozart program, pieces will include Divertimento in D major, Symphony No. 29 in A major, and Piano Concerto No. 12 in A major. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, West Fork, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. Remember, you can listen at our website, KUAF.com. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you so much for tuning in. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'll be back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And congratulations to new parents Tyrell and Sarah Dennison for the safe arrival of Atticus Luther Dennison, 8 pounds, 15 ounces. Tyrell takes care of our webpage and so much more at KUAF. Tyrell and Sarah, congratulations. Ty, we'll see you back at KUAF when you're getting ready later this month or so. This is Ozarks at Large.